Jamie found his old personal cubicle unchanged from 6 years earlier. The bunk with its thin Martian gravity legs was waiting for him. The plastic unit that combined desk and clothes closet stood empty just as he had left it. "Everything's in good working order," he marveled. They had filled the dome with inert nitrogen when they'd left 6 years earlier. Now the air was an Earth-normal mix of nitrogen and oxygen so that they could live inside the dome in their shirt sleeves, or less. During the first expedition, they had been hit by a meteor swarm, almost microscopic little pebbles that had punctured the dome in several places and even grazed Jamie's spacesuit helmet. "One in a trillion chance," the astronomers from Earth had told him. Jamie nodded, hoping that the odds remained that way. Someone had gotten the loudspeakers going and was playing a soothing classical piano recording. Beethoven, Jamie thought. He remembered how the cosmonauts played Tchaikovsky and other Russian composers during the first expedition. Yet the dome felt subtly different. Its new car smell was gone. The first expedition had occupied it for only 45 days, but that had been enough to take the shine off it. The dome felt like home, true enough, but not exactly the way Jamie had remembered it.
"Toilets ain't working."
Jamie turned to see Possum Craig standing in his doorway, a gloomy frown on his heavy-jowled face. The accordion slide door had been left open, so there had been no need to knock.
"Both toilets?"
Craig nodded glumly.
"Must be the water line clogged up, or froze."
Officially, Craig was a geochemist, recruited from a Texas oil company to run the drilling rig. The biologists theorized that Martian life thrived underground, perhaps miles underground, and the lichen they had found on the surface rocks were merely an extension of this below-ground ecology. Plutonian biosphere, they called it. Unofficially, Craig was the expedition's repairman. There wasn't a tool he could not wield expertly. He was plumber, electrician, and general handyman, all wrapped in one package. Trumbull had started calling him Wiley J. Coyote within a week of their launch toward Mars, when Craig had cleverly repaired a malfunctioning computer display screen with little more than a screwdriver and a pair of tweezers from the medical equipment. Craig preferred the new name to his usual Possum, an old oil field reference to his painfully prominent nose. "You think it's frozen?" Jamie asked, crossing his compartment in two strides and stepping past Craig out into the dome's open space.
"Most likely. We should have buried it first thing.
And the recycling system's not online yet."
"I could try overpressuring the line, but I don't want to run the risk of splitting the pipe. You don't want that kind of mess, not on the first night."
Stacy Dejurova came up to them, a troubled pair of furrows between her heavy brows. Her hair was sandy brown. She wore it in a short page boy that looked as if she'd put a bowl over her head and chopped away herself.
"Possum has told you the news?"
she asked gloomily. Jamie nodded. Across the open area, at the row of lockers next to their airlock, he saw Rodriguez worming his arms through the torso of his hard suit. "Tomas is going outside?"
"The chemical toilets are in the lander. He's going to bring them in here for tonight."
"It's already dark out." That meant the temperature was plunging.
"We must have toilets," Dejurova said firmly.
She was almost always somber and serious, an impressive and very capable woman whose formidable exterior masked a keen, dry sense of humor. But now she was in her no-nonsense mode.
"Toilets are primary."
"Who's going with Tomas?" Jamie asked. Safety regulations forbade anyone from going out alone, even a NASA-trained astronaut.
"I'll go," Craig said, without much enthusiasm.
Dejurova shook her head.
"No, I will do it."
"Not you, Stacy," Jamie countered. "We can't have both our astronauts outside at the same time if we can avoid it." Craig walked off toward the lockers. After a moment, Stacy said,
"I will help them check out their suits."
"Fine," said Jamie. Left alone in front of his cubicle, Jamie saw that the two other women, Hall and Shekhtar, were talking quietly together at the galley table. Trumbull and Fuchida were not in sight, probably in one of the labs. He went back into his compartment, slid the door shut, and booted up his laptop computer.
Time to make my report back to Tarawa, he told himself, debating mentally whether the toilet problem was important enough to mention. Let the news media find out our toilets aren't working, and that's all they'll talk about for the next 2 weeks, he told himself. Jamie had insisted from the very beginning of the expedition's planning that the whole team should have dinner together whenever possible. Everyone in the dome must come together for the evening meal. Only those out on field excursions were excused. There had to be one time during each day when they could all get together, discuss the day's work casually, informally, and relax and socialize. Once the chemical toilets were carried into the dome and installed in the two laboratories, everyone washed up from the water supply they had brought with them and congregated at the galley tables. Jamie started pushing the tables together to make one large table. Fuchida immediately came over to help. Then they lined up at the microwave ovens, heating the pre-cooked meals that each person had taken from his or her personal store of supplies. It's been an eventful day, Jamie said once they were all seated.
Tomorrow will be better, said Trudy Hall.
It was a line she had used almost every day of their journey from Earth. She said it with an enforced, almost desperate kind of cheerfulness that made Jamie wonder about her.
Tomorrow will be better only if the toilets are working, Stacy Dezhurova added.
She was sitting next to Hall, thick-set, big-boned Russian next to the slight little English sparrow. They will be, said Trumbull confidently. Then he turned to Craig. Won't they, Wiley?
Sure, sure, Craig said.
Rodriguez looked up from his tamales and refried beans. They better be, he said. Jamie wanted to get off the subject. Dex, he called out, what about the backup water generator? Will we have to move it? Trumbull sat exactly opposite Jamie. Deliberately, Jamie had chosen a seat in the middle of the table. He did not want to appear to be placing himself at its head. Trumbull had taken the chair on the other side. The backup water generator had been launched 2 years earlier on the same booster as the methane fuel generator. The uncrewed landing vehicle, without direct human guidance, had set itself down more than 2 kilometers away from the dome. Before Trumbull could reply, Craig said,
It's just the backup. We brought the primary along with us.
I know, Jamie said. But if the primary breaks down, then what? Is it smart to have our backup water supply sitting 2 clicks away? Trumbull chewed thoughtfully on a mouthful of roast beef, then answered,
We've got 3 options. Either we run piping out to the backup, or we jack the module up and tow it closer to home base with one of the tractors.
The third option? Dezhurova asked.
With an impish grin, Trumbull said,
We take a walk out there every time the primary gunks up on us.
Most of the people around the table laughed politely. Do we have enough piping to cover that distance? Jamie asked. Trumbull nodded. Plenty.
I don't think it's such a good idea to run piping all that distance, Craig said. It'll freeze every night, unless we bury it really deep below the permafrost line.
Trumbull shrugged nonchalantly. Then we'll have to move the rig. Craig nodded his agreement. The one problem they had encountered with Plan Z was that the modules sent ahead of the human team could not be piloted to a sufficient accuracy. The communications lag between Earth and Mars prevented real-time control from Tarawa of the uncrewed module's landings. A 2 kilometer radius was excellent shooting over a distance of 100 million clicks, but it was not quite good enough for the needs of the explorers. All right, Jamie said slowly. First order of business tomorrow is to bring the backup closer to home.
And then we head for the canyon, Trumbull said.
Possum starts drilling core samples, Jamie said.
I moved the garden out of the ship and into its own dome, said Fuchida with a happy grin.
While we head for the canyon, Trumbull insisted.
While we head for the canyon, Jamie conceded. Trumbull nodded, apparently satisfied.
We've got a big job ahead of us, Jamie said to them all. We're going to be living here for 1.5 years. We've been able to grow food crops in the ship. Now we've got to really start living off the land, growing the foods we need and generating our air and fuel from local resources. We have to make ourselves as self-sufficient as possible. They all nodded.
Mars will test us, Fuchida murmured.
What?
The Japanese biologist looked surprised that anyone had heard his comment.
I merely meant that Mars will present challenges to each of us.
Jamie nodded. Challenges and opportunities.